Switch over to someone who's also been blogging on our favorite topics, and that is Miles Green. He blogs at the site greenmiles.com. Also is the Senior Communications Manager at one of my favorite environmental organizations, the National Wildlife Federation. I don't think you've been on our program before, so we want to welcome you, Miles Grant, and thank you for your work.
Thanks for having me.
How long have you been with the National Wildlife Federation?
Oh, I've been at National Wildlife Federation for about 6 years now. Before that, I was a local TV news producer and just got sick of covering those murders and fires and car accidents that plague our local TV news and wanted to do something, you know, more important, something that actually made a difference in the world. And, you know, I really felt like the climate crisis was the number one topic.
Fires, flood, and droughts, oh my, you sound like me. I was doing traffic and weather news on KCBS for about 20 years, and in 1997 said, how come we're not covering environmental stories? And my news director famously said, well, we did an environmental story last month. I'm not kidding you.
Right.
That was 1997.
Right.
So on Earth Day, I launched Trash Talk, which lasted 10 years, reduce, reuse, recycle tips, and then realized that solid waste is not the only waste issue, but what's coming out of our faucets in terms of wasting water and other precious resources, what's coming out of our tailpipes in terms of not only pollution, but CO2 and other greenhouse gases is a bigger problem, and have spent the last so many years trying to get mainstream media to recognize that this is not a fringe issue and these are not, you know, concerns only to liberals and progressives and Democrats. So really good to know about your work, and you did a great piece on free-range bloggers, and after Dave Roberts wrote a piece a couple of days ago about how he's taking a sabbatical, suffering from some climate burnout, I can certainly relate to that, and wanted to get Dave on the show. I think he might come on with us next week, but in the meantime, said, let's get you on between your blog and also the National Wildlife Federation's great work on climate, which I've been aware of for years. You rang a few bells here, so we really appreciate your being available on short notice.
Right, and, you know, personally, I had started my blog, thegreenmiles.com, before I started working for National Wildlife Federation. And National Wildlife Federation came to me knowing that, you know, the online and social media was this brave new world that they weren't really succeeding very well at. We have somebody who does our Twitter and Facebook accounts now named Danielle Brigida, and she really reaches out to the wildlife lovers, the backyard gardeners, the people who take their kids and family hiking on the weekends. You know, and my job is more on the climate and energy and politics side. And, you know, I think NWF took a chance on me, you know, wildlife blogger. Could they, you know, get him to work within their framework a little bit? And would they allow themselves to get pushed outside the traditional conservation organization framework? You know, for me, it's worked out very well. But I think, you know, as I look back at the last 10 years of conservation blogging, especially when it comes to climate change, you know, I think Dave Roberts was the number one blogger when I first started blogging back in, you know, 2006 or so. And today he still is. And really, I don't know who has developed sort of, you know, after him, and that a lot of the bloggers who've come since now work for mainstream news organizations or new media outlets like the Huffington Post or Talking Points Memo, and they're not, you know, blogging in their spare time and, you know, bouncing ideas off the wall. They're working for an editor. They're working on deadline. They're putting out product. And I think you can see the impacts of that in the climate discussion.
Are you saying that's a positive or negative development, or perhaps both, that they're now part of the mainstream structure?
I definitely think it's a negative that, you know, I think you need people like Dave who are willing to talk about ideas that no one else is talking about, who, you know, if the, you know, let's say the Democratic Party is off the rails and is talking about something that is not actually going to solve climate change and is not necessarily politically popular, and they're just doing it because it's popular inside the beltway circles that they run it. Dave's the guy who's willing to stand up and say that. Is somebody who's writing for WashingtonPost.com going to be able to stand up and say that everything is wrong? And, you know, is their editor going to, you know, go ahead and publish something like that? Or are they going to try to rein them in? You know, I think that it narrows the circle of ideas.
Maybe that's why we've not been able to get on a mainstream platform, because we've been saying those things for about 15 years here, not just on Progressive Radio Network, God bless them, but before that on Air America. But, of course, it shouldn't be just, you know, on liberal, you know, outlets, and it shouldn't just be, you know, in the blogosphere, which is, of course, increasingly important. But, I mean, I get what you're saying. Certainly, I know DR will chime in a moment, but I also think there is, you know, rather than just wait for mainstream media people to start mentioning it more, to maybe hire some of us. I know this sounds like a blatant job pitch or self-promotion, but again, you know, it's been going on 16 years now, and we're the mainstream media scouters looking for people, certainly not alone, but you know, it's been a fairly lonely effort, you know, who have been interviewing the leaders, the experts, the activists, the authors, the scientists for many years and are familiar with the terrain. That's what I was sort of hoping might happen about now.
Right, and I think you see that, you know, Sean Hannity is finally getting thrown off the air in a lot of places. You know, Rush Limbaugh has lost so many advertisers that his circle of influence is greatly narrowed. I think the media landscape is changing in a lot of ways. I mean, MSNBC, I think we take it for granted now that it's host to some of the great thinkers and progressive talkers on the air right now, and people like Chris Hayes, Ezra Klein, and Rachel Maddow. That wasn't the case even a couple of years ago. You know, look at Al Jazeera America that just launched. And people, if you have not watched Al Jazeera America, it is going to blow your mind, because instead of having, you know, like you were just saying in your last segment, the climate scientist versus the polluter spokesperson, they just have the climate scientist on, and maybe a reporter who's been following the issue, and they just get to talk about it a little bit. I mean, it seems very simple, but it's revolutionary in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Miles, as I was reading your piece about David Roberts and the issue of burnout, have you ever run across a situation where you read a denialist tract that is just so morally repugnant you literally cannot read the source from which it emanates? That's something I've found where there are certain right-wing sites where I simply cannot go anymore, because you just get this feeling of scumminess that comes over you just to even patronize the sites to see what they're pumping out to their, you know, ignorant base, basically. Do you find that, or and is it something where, in order to avoid burnout, you have to deliberately ignore the most repugnant of the denialist sites?
Oh, absolutely. I think what you have to do when you read something like that is say, who is really going to be convinced by this? And, you know, if it's something that Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh is saying, you know, they're preaching to the choir. They are not winning over mainstream Americans. I think I'm much more concerned if, you know, a Washington Post reporter gets something completely wrong, or, you know, quotes the Heartland Institute or Americans for Prosperity or someone who's really, you know, hardcore on the polluter payroll. Myself, I think you have to take it with a grain of salt, and you have to laugh at it a little bit. Dave Roberts and I had one of our most fun experiences at a Netroots Nation progressive online conference, when the Right Online is a competing conservative conference. And we just, one day we were bored in a Netroots Nation session, and we started following their hashtag and just started refuting everything that they said. And, you know, we didn't make it personal. We didn't make it angry. We just said, no, you're completely wrong, and here's a link that proves it. And they just got so mad and so warped up about it, and we just had fun with it. You know, I think if you can really just say, look, we know we've got the facts on our side. You know, we know we've got the history, and we've got the moral arc on our side. You know, I think it allows you to take a step back and know that you're fighting for justice here. And, you know, you hope eventually that the other side will be proven wrong.
I'll have to send you a link, Miles, of my appearances on Hannity a couple of years ago saying just that. And my, you know, of course, friends would say, why are you even going on there? They're just trying to, you know, argue and fight and trash, you know, environmentalists and liberals. I said, exactly, but we have the facts on our side, so that's pretty powerful. And if we can cast some doubt in 1% of their too many viewers and make them look as foolish as they really are while they're laughing all the way to the bank, so be it, you know. And no other syndicators or stations or networks are calling today to say, come on TV to talk about climate change reality. So that's why I went, and actually enjoyed doing it, because it's a strange kind of fun, isn't it? I guess it's a bit of a perversion.
No, I think what you have to do if you're going to be on a show like that, you're not talking to Sean Hannity. You're talking to the audience member out there, you know, and maybe a sportsman who's seeing changes in the places where he hunts and fish. It could be a mom who's seeing, you know, changes in the weather pattern in her community, who may just have a little bit of doubt that, you know, what they're being fed is not exactly true. I think if you can reach that person, and like I said, you know, keep a level head about it, keep a smile on your face. If you can reach that person, then you've succeeded.
Exactly. And, you know, they, where to begin. It's just too bad that when I've been on those programs, I get death threats. I mean, that you hear from those people. You don't hear from the people who say, thank you, you made me, people like D.R. Tucker, who, if you don't know, Miles, took time to actually read the IPCC report from 2007, I think about 2 years ago, and went from being a climate skeptic, he can certainly speak for himself here in a moment, but, you know, conservative Republican, to becoming not only a climate believer, but actually voting for Obama, and is as passionate a climate activist as there are out there. And he, you know, just took the time to read the science, and I'm sure, I like to think that there are those out there who have done that, but you don't hear from them so much as the kooks when one gets out there in right-wing media.
Right, and I think Dave Roberts made that point very well this week, that, you know, part of the problem with the conservative side and climate science is that, you know, if they have trouble not only accepting the science but accepting the solutions. They really don't want the Environmental Protection Agency to limit industrial carbon pollution. They really don't want our cars to be more fuel efficient, because they have a lot of friends in the fossil fuel industry. It really challenges their worldview. And in some ways, they come at it backwards. They don't like the solutions, so they deny the problem.
Exactly. And, DR, perfect time for you to talk about your theory, which has been repeated elsewhere, about libertarians and conservative Republicans who tend to, you know, believe, really, really strongly believe, that you know, their ideology says there's no room for government ever. And God forbid, if we admitted that climate change was real, we'd have to say there is some role, in fact, maybe a major role for government, and that goes against everything that they, you know, live, breathe, and think.
Yes,
so much cognitive dissonance on the climate front.
Yes, it relates to the same issue that you saw with Rand Paul, when Rand Paul you know, rejected the 1964 Civil Rights Act a couple of years ago, that, you know, there are certain things that if you concede them, they essentially destroy your ideology. And conceding the reality of human-caused climate change and the need to do something about it simply blows up libertarian ideology, which is why they reject it, just like they reject the concept of federal civil rights protection.
And, you know, I think Inside the Beltway has gotten a little bit too obsessed with figuring out the mechanism with which we're going to limit climate change. You know, is it going to be cap and trade? Is it going to be a carbon tax? Yeah, I think President Obama has laid out a plan to use the Environmental Protection Agency to limit industrial carbon pollution that honestly has a lot of widespread public support but doesn't get talked about because economists say it's not the most efficient way to go. Really, I don't necessarily care as long as it gets us to those carbon reductions. And I think, you know, it's something that's out there right now. I think getting behind President Obama's plan to act on climate change, opposing the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline, and really, you know, getting involved in your community. Is it, you know, putting solar panels on the rooftop of your school? Is it offshore wind? Is it opposing coal exports? You know, get involved at the community level, and then you're really going to talk to people on a face-to-face basis and win them over.
Hmm. Miles, it's great to be talking to you. Tell us what my friends at the National Wildlife Federation are working on. Any particular programs or campaigns you'd like to promote?
Oh, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be releasing a new report on freshwater fish in a warming world. And it's something that I think is really going to hit home in a lot of communities. You know, people who go out and take their families fishing on a weekend trip, you know, how is climate change affecting trout? How is it affecting salmon? How is it affecting walleye? You know, we really think that this is a report that's really going to have an impact in some of those, you know, key swing states where, again, like we said, you know, voters may not follow this issue, but they know they're seeing changes in their backyard. We really do hope it's going to have an impact. And, you know, folks can learn more at nwf.org.
Miles, do you think that we'll be seeing political changes in people's backyards next year? I'm making reference to the article, your response to the New York Times op-ed by the four former Republican EPA administrators calling on the public to support action on climate change. And one of the failures of that article I mentioned to Betsy is the fact that none of these four Republicans who wrote it called upon the electorate to vote out Republican climate change deniers, because the expulsion of those Republican climate change deniers from Congress is the only thing that is the thing that has to occur. It is the sine qua non for us to have some sort of legislative action on climate. Do you think that, despite the gerrymandering issues obviously in the House, that a little bit of a green magic might happen in 2014 and we might get a decent Congress so that Obama can close up the last 2 years of his term with a Congress that's willing to work with him, not against him, to protect the environment for present and future generations?
Unfortunately, I don't see that changing in 2014. I think at least until 2016, this Congress is going to remain an obstacle to President Obama. And to be honest, I think any legislation they do pass when it comes to climate change would be horrible, and I wouldn't want it. But I think, you know, what you've seen is out in the states, you've seen some changes this year. You saw conservative organizations try to go after clean energy standards in places like Minnesota, places like North Carolina, and fail miserably everywhere they went. I think what's happened is that, you know, clean energy is really creating constituencies in these otherwise red or purple states that people see there, you know, any attack on solar and wind power is an attack on jobs in their community. I think if we as a conservation movement could do that in more states, build more strong renewable energy standards, then I think congressional Republican leadership would be forced to at least drop their attacks and maybe even be open to a solution. But I think that requires taking a step back from D.C., taking a step back from the grand bargain politics that have been so destructive in the last couple of years, and really getting back to the grassroots. I think that's one thing that NWF's doing with our sportsman outreach and really trying to reach some of those independent voters. I think organizations like the Sierra Club with their Beyond Coal campaign are doing that. I think if we really build that grassroots at the state level, then maybe if we get some congressional changes, we'll be ready to act.
Then all we need is a nationally syndicated, environmentally focused, climate-dedicated program somewhere on mainstream radio or television, and we might just have a chance. After all, 95% of talk radio, last time I checked, was ultra-conservative. And, you know, you can only do so much, you know, on a progressive station or site like the wonderful Progressive Radio Network, because the progressives listen to that and the right wings listen to the right wing. That's why the mainstream, I think, does have a role to play.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for joining us, and great to know you're at the National Wildlife Federation, and say hello to Larry Schweiger and a few others who we've been working with and interviewing over the many years, and we'll be in touch and really, again, appreciate your joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And now we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be hearing from the new executive director of the Rainforest Action Network. Lindsay Allen will tell us what is up front and top of mind for her as she takes over the helm. She's been at Rainforest Action on their forest program for years, just kicking butt like they do at RAN. We're going to find out what her top priorities will be. And feel free to call in. You can call the Progressive Radio Network phone line. And that number is 888-874-4888. I can join the conversation. We'll be right back. This is The Green Front.